Okay. All right, so we're going to go ahead and start the second monthly meeting for the Port of Port Townsend for Wednesday, April 25th. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, so on the agenda, I have an addition. We're going to have an item B in the executive session, acceptable minimum bid price. And other than that, there's a couple of corrections I wanted to make on item X. The next regular meeting is actually a regular meeting and that it's not an executive session, but it's really a special meeting, so we won't be able to change any agenda items, but it's going to be the one on May 8th. It's a special meeting, gives us at a different time. But it's not anything special other than that it's not in the normal scheme of times that we usually have our meetings. So with those corrections, do I hear a move to approve the agenda?
I make a motion to second the agenda.
All in favor?
Aye.
The agenda is approved. Okay, public comments. Carol.
Forty-five times a month or more for 6 months of the year, southerly gales of 25 and 30 knots take direct aim at Point Hudson's harbor entrance. These gales drive waves whose heights are governed by the speed of the wind, fetch, the distance in which a wave has to grow, and the duration of the gale. These waves are relatively benign until they break and unleash tons of water at falling speeds of up to 40 knots. Waves break when the friction from the shoaling seabed causes them to grow too steep and they collapse under their own weight. In addition, wind against tidal current causes waves to grow in size and steepness, creating a chaotic sea state, such as that often seen at Point Wilson. If the steel combi wall that Mott MacDonald has engineered and the port has put out for bid replaces Point Hudson's wave-absorbing rock breakwater, the steel combi wall will reflect wave energy back, such as we see when we cross the Hood Canal Bridge. Reflection will both heighten and steepen waves, creating large and potentially breaking seas, bouncing back and forth inside the marina entry and outside onto the Maritime Center Beach. The laws of fluid dynamics and Mott MacDonald's wave simulations confirm this. A breaking sea from astern can poop a vessel, swamping its cockpit, or filling an open boat, or causing a larger vessel to broach or lose steerage way by pushing it from behind. A breaking sea from a beam can cause a boat to be knocked down, capsize, or roll, depending on the vessel's size and displacement. The height of a breaking sea need only be a third to half the length of a boat to roll it. These are very real concerns and why the U.S. Coast Guard monitors the Washington and Oregon Coast harbor entrances, such as the Columbia River Bar, and periodically closes them to vessels of certain sizes. Will the Coast Guard be monitoring our new, less safe Point Hudson entrance? Will the port make the call to close it? Will Mott MacDonald be liable for any accidents that occur because of a new wave climate in Point Hudson's entry channel, which by their written estimates will be 10 to 20% worse than the existing wave climate, and by their wave simulations, far worse than that? Will vessels coming from near and far for the Wooden Boat Festival be turned away in an abundance of caution? I'm certain that a steel combi wall is an unsafe breakwater for Point Hudson. Point Hudson is arguably the windiest harbor in the Salish Sea, with an entrance that is situated on a lee shore 6 months of the year. Point Hudson is a harbor of choice for festivals, rendezvous, and holidays, and it is a harbor of necessity for vessels in need of marine services, customs clearance, or shelter. Our harbor deserves a rock breakwater, like the existing one, rehabilitated or new, that absorbs wave energy, has site-specific proven performance, and has provided safe entry for 84 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, Ann?
Yeah.
about this Ken Cove proposal. They've applied for a permit to increase their mussel production by about 60% in Wilsing Bay. They make thousands of dollars there and pay the port nothing for the privileges. Their crew load the boats from the mussel pens, which take the harvest in large blue plastic crates to the marina ramp, where their crane unloads the crates. Their forklift then loads the crates into Ken Cove transport trucks, and away they go back over to Whitby. We don't see any of them, anything. They pay nothing to use the ramp. They pay no rent for the storage of their equipment. Their imported crew occupy the entire parking lot now and pay nothing. No local labor is hired. They build their floats in the public parking lot and block the ramps. They already make a lot of noise and occupy the boat ramp for hours every day. And now they want to increase production by 1,000 feet or more. The port is simply giving Ken Cove a gift of free operation. Justice Coast, who makes millions of dollars out of Wilsing Bay and pays only for a lease. Their lease wasn't even increased when they quadrupled their production. Pete was right when he said that the Maritime Center should pay the port 10% of projected growth. That's a good idea. Gross, that's a good idea. So should Coast and Ken Cove, or something like a dollar surcharge on every bag of oyster or mussels. The port could collect enough money to pay for the for Townsend jetties and do the required maintenance in Wilsing Bay and the marina. Why are you giving away these obvious assets? These are gifts to highly profitable businesses who use Wilsing Bay water and port property essentially for free. And just as an aside, if they increase their production, they're already on the boat ramp all day long every day with heavy equipment. In the summer, when hundreds of people come to use the beach, there will be no parking, there'll be heavy equipment, and we might as well face the fact that it's become an industrial park and forget about it. Really, the public won't be able to use that. So I read here, this is an aside, I live about 2 miles north of the Ken Cove operation right now on Wilsing Bay. The mussels are harvested by cutting the lines and bringing them on board a vessel which contains machinery that strips the mussels from the lines. Yes, indeed. The lines and the bags and everything. So I walk down to the beach. And in 3 minutes or less, this is what I pulled off my beach. That is shellfish bags. That's what they use. And this is all over the beach. You know.
Thank you.
Yes, and I probably won't be coming back to this meeting because it makes me mad. Thank you.
Any other comments?
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry, George.
Well, I can't beat those two X, not at all. But I do want to share with you a thank you on behalf of the Jefferson County Democratic Party. They hosted an economic development forum last night at the Port Ludlow Beach Club. It was very, very informative, and I particularly want to thank Bill and Sam for their presentations. For the first time in a long time, I think that the public really got a good dose of what the potential of this port is and where we could go economically. So I thank you two for being there, and I thank the port for getting out and speaking. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Any other public comments? Okay. Then on to the consent agenda. Is everyone thankful? Look at that consent agenda.
I have one item on the minutes.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, I have April 27th down as the due date for the Peter Matthews study. It shows up in the minutes as April 25th. What, did I have that wrong?
They had talked about the 25th, indeed, and we have shifted it to the 27th. And
okay, because I had it down to the 27th mm-hmm, for some reason.
Right.
But that's what it was.
It was correct in the minutes, yes.
Okay, then without any other objections, I move to accept the consent agenda.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, the consent agenda has been accepted. So just so that I'm clear, the minutes had it on the 25th, and it's really the 27th, is that correct?
It was stated correctly as the 25th, and the minutes reflect that, that statement. So the minutes are correct. They're not able to provide that today, so.
Okay.
Subsequent change.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's still gonna be the 27th. Okay, where'd Bob go? There he is, 27th.
Yeah, and I'll talk more about that in a second.
Okay. Okay. The first reading is a resolution 67, this is the first reading of a resolution number 678-18 discussing limited tax obligation bonds. So I'll turn that over to staff and hopefully they'll make it a little bit more clear to me. I read all the words and.
Yes, I'd like to give you some introductory remarks and then happy to take any questions. I'd like to note that we have two Scotts with us today, Scott McJanet from K&O Gates and Scott Bauer with Northwest Municipal Advisors. They almost got it. And as the commission considers the resolution before you, I'd like to point out a few things. First, the bond resolution before you is for an amount not to exceed $3.4 million. This amount accounts for costs associated with bond issuance, fluctuations in the bond market, and proceeds of $3.2 million. We give ourselves a little cushion there, depending upon that there's fluctuations.
So what you're saying is that at 3.4, we have 3.2 that actually come to us.
That's what we are currently planning on, and what it's more that we are proceeding as if to receive 3.2, and we expect the bond issuance actually to be higher than that, but not to exceed 3.4. So we have to accommodate for those fluctuations and the bond issuance charges. So it's a. Is that making sense?
No.
All right.
So proceeds will be 3.2.
Yes.
Right.
But the fees may fluctuate above that. But they set a limit on that of 3.4.
Yeah.
So.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. The fee doesn't actually fluctuate.
Yeah. It's just to account for potentially the bond market. We don't know what's going to happen until we actually say now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just in case something happens with the bond market, we have some wiggle room.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You hope it's 3.4.
Yes,
it shall be, it says here.
Yes, you will. The commission, should you adopt this resolution, would authorize us up to 3.4, not to exceed that.
Mm-hmm.
So
then what may change is the amount coming back to us. If we are only authorizing 3.4, then the differences in what you're talking about, what the bond market may be higher or lower, would potentially then have the. If we have 3.4 max, then we're still going to expect 3.2 coming back up.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. That's what upping the limit that gives us confidence that we'll be able to recognize proceeds of 3.2.
Okay.
The staff continues to recommend the bond proceeds to be used for two purposes. First is the construction costs associated with Point Pleasant South Jetty, and the second is the replenishment of cash. And we've discussed this on several different occasions. Cash levels are currently below recommended levels. In 2017, cash was used to pay for the stormwater improvements in the yard and the repair of the Boat Haven Jetty at the Commercial Basin. It was originally planned that a bond for $1,060,000 in 2017 to pay for the stormwater improvements. So we were in the adopted budget, we had a bond for those improvements. We then value engineered the project, got the cost down considerably to a level where it really didn't make sense to bond for it. And so instead we spent cash, but it has lowered our cash levels. And so it's a reminder. I know we've had this conversation several times that part of the bond proceeds is to replenish our cash levels to a recommended level by staff. The requested bond amount was based upon the following. First of all, the cash flow projections and ability to service the bond debt, our long-term general obligation bonding capacity, and preliminary cost estimates based upon a 60% design of the South Breakwater, South Jetty. The final cost estimate for the jetty replacement has been affected by conditions such as the imposition of steel tariffs. Staff continues to work diligently to provide the best conditions for the a bid environment. For example, a construction easement from the Northwest Maritime Center has been secured and will likely very favorably affect the bids. And we'd like to thank the Northwest Maritime Center for that. In addition, staff has been working with the permitting agencies for such things as allowed increased uses of vibratory hammers. And so that could also favorably affect the bids. And we are working through that. We don't have that secured yet. But the message that I want to deliver to you is that we are continuing to really work every angle to make sure that we are creating as favorable a bid environment as we possibly can. We had a mandatory pre-bid meeting last week, and we had 7 companies that attended. So I was pleasantly surprised by that number. Still, staff remains concerned that despite every effort, issuance of this bond as presented, combined with the remaining grant monies, may leave the port with insufficient resources to complete the South Jetty project. So I just want to make sure that as we're moving forward that your consideration of issuance of this bonding amount does not guarantee that we would actually be able to award the project and complete the project.
Can we have a quick discussion about if the project comes in way above our expectations, mm-hmm. cannot in good conscience go ahead with it, mm-hmm. by going through the adoption of this bond resolution today, if we say no, we're not going to proceed with the jetty project, what happens with the bond?
Right, so if you hold that thought for just one moment.
Okay.
This is the first
reading. This is the first reading.
Yes, this is the first reading.
I understand. Yeah. I'm just wanting to.
Yeah, I think I understand your question. I would say that in an agency that is less financially constrained, a bond amount sufficient to cover all-in project cost with a margin of safety on that would have been proposed. So we would have said, we think this is it. We're gonna put a margin on that, and we're gonna bond for an increased amount. Or if we would have had sufficient cash balances, we would have done the same. Unfortunately, the court's current financial position and debt capacity did not permit such an approach. So I want to recognize that this is a bit of an unusual bonding scenario, and that we're really pretty close to the bone on this. So I think you all understand that. Getting back to your question, Commissioner, is the second reading of this is scheduled for that special meeting on May 8th. And we will have open bids on May 7th. At that point, if May 7th it appears that we don't have the resources to award the contract, you could choose to postpone that second hearing. And that would to allow staff to come up with some recommendations of how to proceed forward.
Postpone the second reading, you mean?
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What did I say?
Hearing.
Hearing, yes, I meant reading. Thank mm-hmm. you. So that's one option. Other options that are out there, we have everything from, and we would like to see how the bids come in and then give you our assessment of where we are, everything from how we might move forward with some approach that might consider redesign of the jetty or modification of the bid, taking off some elements that would likely lower the price. Another option is that we could reconfigure this bond issuance, and for both its amount, we could lower the amount and note a different use, such as replenishment of our cash resources and repair of some roofs and things that we've listed on our 2018. So we have a couple different options. I think that until we open those bids, we're not really going to be able to make a recommendation. But I would like to note that should the bids come in high, the commission has the option of either postponing indefinitely the second reading or postponing it for a set amount of time just to have us come up with some recommendations.
So what does that do to the Scots?
What does that do to the Scots?
Are we going to hear from them in a minute?
I think they're just here to answer questions for you.
Okay, so what does that do to the Scots?
I guess it does nothing to us. I mean, so we'll wait your direction come May 7th. I mean, mm-hmm. One thing that we'll want to hear from come the 7th is just get an understanding of where you're going, because the bond rating would be due to come out a couple days after that. Mm-hmm. And so if there is some sort of substantial change one way or the other, we'll want to communicate that to the rating agency before they release the rating.
Yeah,
because my thought or my concern is, you know, if I'm building a house, I cannot enter into that contract unless I have appropriate amount of money borrowed to do the house, right? Mm-hmm. So that seems to be the case here, that, you know, it's going to be really tight. We may not have enough margin, we may. And so you're going to have three laymen kind of making that decision. But in the end, it's really the bond council that wants to know that this port has the ability to pay back this bond. And so if we're kind of like doing this right on the edge, does that affect our rating? Does it affect, what aspects in terms of bond council does this affect?
Well, look what you want to answer is bond council. Yeah. Financial advisor, so I guess we're both counseling.
Right,
he's
yeah.
The attorney.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're right now, you're affected by the fact that we're issuing general obligation debt, which is supported by your tax levy and all the other revenues of the port. Your current tax levy is at about $1 million. The debt service of all your general obligation debt plus this is going to be a little bit more than that. Mm-hmm. So to the extent that it is more, it will rely on the port's, again, yeah, other revenues. So the fact that that's happening may impact the rating. I think you're at a AA3. So it could change. We don't know. I've been in communication with the rating analyst. We had a rating call, I think, about 2 weeks ago. So we've supplied them with really all the information I think that they need to make their determination.
Right.
So Sam, we have from the time we opened the bid, we've given people the guidance that we're going to make a decision in 2 weeks. Is that?
The way that our normal bidding process happens is that we open the bid at the time, at that opening, we determine the apparent low bidder. We then go through a process to determine the apparent low, responsible, and responsive bidder. We then ask for a bid bond within, and Eric was going to check on me the time that we requested on the specifications, and I'm not 100% sure what length that we asked for that bid bond, which basically holds the bidding contractors that they need to honor that price. We have up to, I think, about 30 days to actually award the project. We would likely within 2 weeks be able to give notice of intent to award, and then we check everything. We go through Department of Revenue. We, you know, check up everything, and then we use it within the month that we were actually awarding from that point.
And then we would make progress payments on the project as it goes along, I assume.
Yes. Once construction starts, and then
material is purchased, construction starts.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's outlined in the specifications of the order of progress payment.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So, are we done?
Any other questions?
Any other questions?
Abigail, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Want to know
really.
The money's going to be in your checkbook, is that?
Well, basically, I mean, what would happen is once the bond proceeds were received. Proceeds were received, they go and are held by the county treasurer in a special fund for the port. So we would have to request the funds as we used.
So they get the float.
Mm-hmm. They do.
Clever.
They're our treasurer, so that's...
Yeah.
It's actually pretty low payment for a treasurer.
I think the treasurer gets its fee though, right? You get your interest or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So did you have anything else you wanted to add to what Sam said?
The only thing I'd put in there as well is just to note that the resolution as you have it drafted before you has a lot of flexibility in it. You can determine to go ahead with the reimbursement on the stormwater and surface improvements and then do or not do the jetty project as well. The not to exceed amount, you could always issue less than that if like a subset of those defined projects makes sense when you get there. So. You could choose to quit it entirely on the 7th, or you could choose to proceed at a lower amount or for a subset of the projects. You're building in quite a bit of flexibility.
Cool.
Great.
How about the bond market? How are we doing on the bond market?
You know, it's holding in there. I think the rates were a little higher earlier in the year. The short-term rates have come up, but actually where we're setting up this debt is actually a little bit longer. So if you were to compare interest rates from 15 years on out, compared to a five-year average, they're actually right on where they're at. And certainly shorter-term rates have gone up. So as the Fed pushes up, the yield curve has been going up. But again, where we've structured these bonds is to wrap it around your existing debt. And so they're a little bit longer and shorter.
So Abigail, if you had an extra $2.7 million, do you have, I mean, would that be a good way to... I mean, does that give you some flexibility? Is it another pain that you have to pay it off? I mean, unless we bank it and for the next flood, I'm just concerned that, you know, we're really putting our bonding capacity up to its limits unless we put it in a some sort of a sequestered account that we can't accidentally spend it all before we find out we need it. I mean, how do we?
You talking about if we don't do the jetty?
If we don't do the jetty and we decide to do the bond.
So that kind of goes back to what Scott was saying about the use.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it has to be, the use has to be approved by resolution by the commission. And you can make that as flexible or as, I mean, it's got to be capital, but it could be as flexible or as specific as you like.
Yeah, well, so, if it was me, if I was borrowing money for a car and I didn't buy the car, I'd end up with a new high-def television set and golf clubs and, you know.
I don't think that there'd be risk of it just being... spent away. I mean, it would have to be approved by commission, you know, whatever projects, alternative projects were decided to be done.
That being said, it will, we get to our next item of business is the high def TV purchase, the calendar for workshops coming up, and I do want to have a discussion in upcoming with the commission for the five-year capital projects and revisit of those 2018 projects and make some decisions about that. So I think that should the bids come in too high and we're faced with some choices, we want to bring some options forward that looks at our full capital need.
And to address that earlier question, your instructions to bidder has a 60-day.
Thank you so much.
Okay. What was that?
60 days.
What's 60 days?
Instructions to bidders on when they can expect a bid selection.
Oh, okay.
The bid will be valid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so they have to have a bond in there that they honor that for that amount of time.
Okay.
Thank you, Carol.
I've got one question. So, Scott with Keno Gates.
I got one.
So, the language of this bond, did you write this? Is that who actually writes the bond?
Yes, we can handle this. Yes.
Yeah. And then do we, like with Caroline, do you peruse this or?
I rely expressly on getting okay.
No, she is extremely modest. She knows these documents as well as we do. I would not be surprised in the least. It's extremely
okay.
Yes.
All right. So our interests are looked at from two
in
different angles.
Belts and suspenders.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Then we'll go on to regular business, the March 2018 financials.
There we are.
Okay. So starting on page 44 of the packet.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so starting on page 44, we've got the revenue trend the last 4 years. We're doing well. We continue to do real well overall with the operating revenues ahead over the prior year by $120,000. And year-to-date budget, we're ahead by about $15,000. Specifically, I think the strongest area is the marina and RV parks. They've continued to take the lead in the revenues comparative to the other types of revenues, as well as, you know, year to year. Yard revenues are ahead overall. It's interesting, the hoist revenues are strong for both the shipyard and the workyard, and the shipyard is just barely ahead in their regular revenues, and the workyard continues to struggle a bit, even with some discounts offered for the yard. Property leases continue to lag a little bit from the prior year. Again, as we've mentioned in prior months, it's primarily Point Hudson, which is the Cupola House and the Armory Building. Fuel sales are a little bit low comparatively. Ramp revenues have kind of leveled off. They were surging ahead in prior months of the prior, compared to the prior year, but they've kind of leveled off when we get to the first quarter. And then utility revenues are up a bit over the prior year.
Before you go any farther, you know, back in the shipyard hoist revenue, The reduction in the storage capacity from prior years is reflected in the shipyard. But I don't remember reducing capacity for storage capacity in the shipyard. Did we lose something?
Well, I was talking about 15 when the co-op got more land.
So we're not talking about from last year then. We're talking about from a long, long time ago. Okay.
Yeah, just comparatively over the years when you look at it.
So in other words, our storage capacity is about max, or is there room for more?
I'd say there's room, yeah.
We're averaging about 1920 out of the 22 slips. And then there's turnover within the yard, but we keep to continue to keep replenishing it. That's working out pretty well, I think, in the shipyard. Workyard, we're up in terms of the hoist, but they're going on either private leases or else they're not staying for extended periods, potentially. So that's why the workyard. Because the actual absolute numbers are actually equal to top for the hoist is for the lifts is equal to the top, you know, equals the top of the 5 year run. So there's, I think there was 81. So, and that's equal to 2015. So it's a little bit counterintuitive. And so we're actually lifting a lot of vessels, but the revenue's a little bit down. Of course, we're discounting, you know, we're pretty heavily discounting it. We extended the discount into April more as a really, just to be sure that we were absolutely clear that anybody, that none of the customers felt that we were being switching, that we were switching from March to April, so we extended so that they realized if they did, if they still were going to haul out in April, that they would get the additional 10% discount on the time. So, anyway, we're doing pretty well, but we could be, we're going to need to do better, and we just need to try to fill the workyard. And that'll, and try to get it at the greatest occupancy that we can. But the numbers, but the overall hoist numbers are up, are pretty strong. And if you look at the quarterly average over the past 5 years, I guess it's kind of a staff report, but you know, we're like at 32 on the, I believe on the 300-ton on the shipyard. So we're right in the money, basically, in terms of the overall number of lifts. And we're getting a lot of good projects, I think, going through the shipyard. So again, we've been emphasizing, trying to work on emphasizing the workyard. And then the question is whether or not they go on off-port property. So if they go into leased property, we're not going to see that revenue for storage that we may have seen in the past years. That's a key point.
So moving on to page 45, the expenses, expense trend. We're actually a little less than 2017, but a lot of that has to do with unfilled staff positions. Also the timing of some of the other expenditures, which are not always easy to predict. Facilities and operations expenses are more by about $3,000, which is pretty minimal. But compared to budget, it's below. And that's primarily due to recurring maintenance costs.
So these, the staff, is that, is, are those staff positions filled now, or are they still
vacant? Yeah, we have since filled the CSR2 position.
So this is just a step?
Yeah, because we're looking at a quarterly to date.
Okay.
Yeah. That position was filled in April.
And security is no longer in personnel, it's moved over to contract.
Right.
You're paying a contractor.
Although it is in the budget.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's in the budget, but now it's under contracts, but it's not budgeted under contracts, so it ends up in expenditures.
So there's a variance in contract, variance in contract and a variance in staff.
Yeah.
In balance in some respects.
It's a little less. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One thing I would note, and it's in your charts as well, it would be nice to see A and B broken out so that we could get like a 5-year trend of what we're doing, because I think that's kind of our sleeping giant as far as expenses go. And, you know, we do facilities and operations, we do, but we don't do A and G. So it seems like that would be a good thing to be seeing as we move along.
Right, and actually A and G is wrapped in with everything here because we are reported as one. If you wanted to separate it out, we'd have to have a conversation about what exactly you're looking at, because we currently have commission, we have executive staff.
You allocate that to different cost centers.
Right.
Too. Yeah, and then we have accounting, and then there's different, you know, line items in each of those. So, but those are actually part of the whole expense totals as it's presented here. Net operating income to date is $144,000, and when including net non-operating revenue and expense, the net profit is $421,000. Let's see, non-operating revenues, there's the piece about the cost. Just the timing of the grant revenue receipts is not always going to be, it's not easy to predict, so that will always fluctuate. And then there's a significant driver in a reduction in the miscellaneous non-operating revenue from 17 to 18, and that's an insurance recovery that was received in 2017 early on. It's about $6,000. And as far as the non-operating expenses, I think we've noted before about the bond issuance costs was not put into the budget, so that's something that'll hit eventually. And then also in 2017, under miscellaneous non-operating, we had the Quilcene feasibility costs that were captured in that line item. So that's another variance.
Where do you see the project manager expenses coming in for the jetty?
That would be under capital, so that would not be in operations or non-operating. Hit cash. Capital projects, basically it's primarily the South Jetty and the stormwater and JCIA were the predominant expenditures for capital in March. Capital purchases, we had about $20,000, and that was the laundry equipment replacement at Boat Haven as well as Point Hudson. And then the cash investment balances ended the month at $1.9 million, with reserves at $900,000 and the unreserved at a little over $1 million. So then on page 47, you've got the actual statement of activity and the comparison year-to-date budget and year-to-date prior year. There's variances there that are pretty much what we just went over in the narrative. And then what should have been on page 48, which I had to give you additional documents the other day because my four pages didn't print out before I went on vacation. Apologize about that. But the five-year trend for marinas and RV parks revenue, I did add a year because 4 years just didn't seem quite sufficient. 5 years sounds better. So I added another year, threw in 2014, so we could take a look. And as you can see, for marinas and RV parks, we're doing better than ever for the last 5 years. And, you know, some of that is going to be the rates increase, you know, but I think a lot of that too is staff and the way that they're managing the marinas and the RV parks. And then the next page is the yard operations revenue. Again, 14 was added, and let's see. I was looking into some of the details of this because, of course, these are the totals for each of those for the yard. And the largest line items are going to be the hoist revenues, the yard revenues, like workyard, shipyard, and what we did have prior, which was the marine trades. So you just have to keep in mind that when we are looking at these prior years, the marine trades revenue we no longer, of course, have. And for instance, in 2014, that marine trades year-to-date dollars was $27,000. So that's a big chunk of money comparatively to this year. And the same was in 2015. That was 28,000 year to date. And
really seeing a pattern in yard operations in January,
mm-hmm.
and somehow we have to fix that. I mean, you're off by 40 grand in 2014 and 30 grand
and
15, 35. I mean, that's really serious dollars that we're missing at a time when we really need them.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, we're kind of back to the marketing world of,
mm-hmm.
we got to bring boats here mm-hmm. in the winter.
And a lot of that,
that's down that low.
That kind of reflects back to my comment in the narrative about the capacity that was reduced. That's my understanding, right, in 2015. Because in 2014, our workyard revenue was 118,000, the shipyard revenue was 118,000, and in 2018, you compare that and we got 91,000 and 95,000. So, I mean, that's lay days, right? So, that's
so what you're suggesting is that they're going off port property. They're here, but they're
right.
just not. We're not being able to charge for
it. Yeah, and
mm-hmm.
that may not be all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's certainly some of that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why what led that narrative comment was my looking at the higher dollar value line items within the yard. And again, like I said, marine trades, we don't have that 3% anymore. So that's hit us hard. I mean, it's like 30,000 year to date in 14 and 15. That's a big chunk of money. So, we'll see what happens in April. I'm anxious to see because 16 is pretty high. It'll be interesting to see how April unfolds. And then the next page, we have the property and lease revenue. It's pretty flat, pretty similar to prior years. You know, I'm hoping when we get the lease rate study done and the policies in place, we can make these changes. But it might be up a little bit if we're able to rent out the people house in the armory building, although I know there's work that needs to be done there too.
So this peak in September, is that for the Wooden Boat Festival?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yep, that was last year. Yep. So, and then the last page is the five-year trend of facilities and operations expenses. You know, pretty much along the same lines as previous years, fluctuate a little bit here and there, but nothing really unusual, and actually year to date it is below budget, so I've noticed, I noted some of the spikes when I added 2014. We had an August spike, which was the settlement payment for Pecos. And then a September 14 spike, which was, it was an adjustment to a capital item, something had been capitalized and it should have been expended. It was for an accident at Point Hudson.
And then again, just kind of harping on the same thing here, so facilities and operations, this also encompasses admin?
Mm-hmm.
This is all of our expenses for
mm-hmm.
a year, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In December, we went like on a happy excursion somewhere up in the sky, and then, but by January 1st, we were cool again. Is that
so? December, that's note one. That's about when we did the bad debt write-off.
Oh.
And so that's a non-cash item, but it's charged to an expenditure. So that, and actually, it's interesting because I broke it out in the note by year. What those expenditures applied to. So we did the write-off and it hit in 17 at almost 100,000, but really it was 16,000 applicable to 2014, 67,000 applied to 2015, and 6,000 in 2016, and a little over 7,000 in 2017. So
it was 4 years worth then, right?
It was,
uh-huh.
Yeah. So even though it actually hits in 17, realistically,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you were to go back and do maybe a performance adjustment, you would adjust those previous years,
mm-hmm.
you know, and see a different trend.
Okay.
It does bring up the real focus that we brought to the organization on avoiding bad debt, everything from our Derelict Vessel program and just how attentive staff are now for anything that could saddle the fort with the liability that way, as well as the making sure that we're keeping up to date, being pretty aggressive with our accounts payable, and then of course the issue of having sufficient security for our tenants. So as you can see, over time, these type of bad debts can really accumulate. And so when we look at I guess paying attention to revenue, if we were to try to make this type of margin, we would have likely had to make in the neighborhood of $600,000 in revenue to have this margin. So every dollar of bad debt that we can avoid is pays off for us to our bottom line and our NOI considerably. And I think that staff has well embraced that. Tenant, and I'd like to commend Mr. England on that. He has really, you know, brought that to the attention of all staff and worked well with Ms. Berg and her staff, and we're all kind of on it, making sure that we're trying to avoid it as best we can.
And it's just not just monitoring the accounts; it's also, like you were saying, getting security deposits,
mm-hmm.
because if somebody goes bankrupt, that might be all you have.
Yes,
so.
All right.
So I was looking at the checks we wrote this month, and $6,800 to D&M disposal. Every time I go out to the airport, I always stick my head in that little
mm-hmm.
thing. The last time there were two printers and a floor lamp in there, along with a bunch of Romex out of somebody's house remodel project. And I'm thinking, I mean,
wow.
Every time I go out there,
yeah.
I mean, I have not seen it not the stuff in there. So I'm thinking that somebody's just using that. It's not like some contractors
mm-hmm.
can use it. So I'm not sure what we can do. I mean, I realize you guys are working really hard, and,
right.
and I'm so happy that we haven't got another Cobb out there or something like
mm-hmm.
that. But I'm thinking that there's still some, and I'm really happy about how the expenditures are way down
mm-hmm.
from previous years.
Mm-hmm.
But it just makes me realize that there's still some other things that we can be looking at.
There are absolutely other things, and the cost of garbage disposal and utilities in general is absolutely one that we've made some progress in, and again, really kudos to Ms. Berg and her staff have really recouped a lot in that utility. The garbage management is another big item that we can really see some efficiencies in, and that happens down here in the yard too. So we're kind of seen as a place where people can come and dump the garbage for free. So we're,
and you don't have to wait in line.
And you don't have to wait in line.
Problem with the airport, it doesn't happen during the day, it happens at night. Mm-hmm. No one's around. You gotta be kind of brave to do
so
it.
So where is that dumpster?
Don't tell anybody. We're not gonna say it and open.
It's right in the middle of the end of the parking lot, you know, where there's that big rail.
By the restroom.
Yeah, by the restroom. By
yeah.
The
dog. Yeah, just go poke your head in there. Every time you go out there, you'll find something new.
I don't go to that restroom.
Okay.
That's the low end of the airport. High end.
So anyway, I'm pretty buoyed up by the financials that we've seen so far. I'm really happy. Okay, the commissioner works. Any other comments on this before we leave?
Okay. I would just like to take a moment again to commend staff. We've really been very focused and very, very pleased with where we are. We still have growth and improvements to do, but I think that we are showing some of the anomaly of last year, and that we are recovering from that and also making progress even beyond that.
Okay, so the going on to regular business, item B, commission workshop calendar.
Yes. This is kind of bringing us back to the commission goal to consider policies, and we addressed a lot of things in the first quarter, and a couple things we diverted organizational attention to addressing the offer made by the Northwest Maritime Center, and so have postponed the consideration of a couple key items, and so I'd like to run the schedule by you, get your input, and then know that also there are a host of the other policies that we are looking at bringing forward over the summer. I want to take some time to mesh that with the budget adoption policy. The last time I presented that schedule, I believe it's Commissioner Hanke said, you know, we should have some of these completed before we actually get into budget discussions. So I want to mesh those two calendars. But at this point, I know that the great interest of the commission is having a discussion of business practices and leasing practices. And so I wanted to see if this schedule, bringing it to you in the workshop for the 23rd of May, would work, and then we could bring it back for first and second readings then in June, once we establish alignment on those business practices and leasing practices. Then it would be a legislative process, it would be something that adopted by the commission, and so should go through our two-track process.
When you say business practices, can you kind of fill that in a little bit?
Sure, and I didn't attach them to this packet. I have handed out examples before from both the Port of Anacortes and the Port of Camas Washougal. Mm-hmm. And one of the practices that stick in my head, I think, and they were kind of different styles. Port of Anacortes was very simple and really high elevation, but their policy is that it's the policy that businesses should not be subsidized with public dollars, period. In Camas Washougal, they had a little bit kind of the same concept, but it's like any asset should be leased in a manner such that all costs associated with the maintenance of that asset are captured in the lease, and basically the lease covers all of that. So kind of different ways of approaching those. I will send these out well in advance. Chairman Tucker and I had discussed that we might put a straw dog out for you to consider, kind of meld those two documents together and other things that we'd like to consider, and then put out just one for the full commission's consideration in advance of that workshop.
and leasing practices, we'll have a chance to digest Kidder Matthews before then. So we
yes,
can
that is that, that that is the goal. Mm-hmm.
And then I see that the after the workshop on the 23rd, next meeting after that, we'll have the first reading on the results of what we discussed.
Yes, exactly.
And the five-year capital program, I've been looking forward to that. Great, that looks good to me.
Do you see the five-year capital program? I guess what concerns me is I want to have input and direction on the budget
mm-hmm.
as we move towards the middle of the year,
mm-hmm.
like I said earlier. And that really kind of comes up with a strategic plan
mm-hmm.
in terms of what's going to guide us as
mm-hmm.
we go into the budget.
Mm-hmm.
The last couple of years, that's happened in January with our retreat
mm-hmm.
meeting, which is really kind of after the fact. It doesn't really work that way. And so, it seems to me we should be really looking at what is it strategically that we want to do,
mm-hmm.
how
mm-hmm.
are we going to get there,
right?
And get that on paper so we can review it year to year and
mm-hmm.
are we getting to where we want to go?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that a five-year capital plan, that's part of it, I get that,
mm-hmm.
but it isn't the actual strategy for how we're going.
Right, no, it, right.
And so I guess that would be my concern here is that in the scheduling of this, it would be nice to give that some time and effort
mm-hmm.
so that as we move into Q3 and Q4, we've got that to, as a guiding post.
We've been talking about updating the strategic plan for so long, but all these big fires come up and get in the way. I think it's probably.
Do we have any sense of does a percentage of fires above our plan, is that a constant or is it? It'd be nice to say, well, if you plan to spend a dollar, but we always spend $1.25. There's no accounting rubric to put in that fudge factor, but it seems like the sort of thing that you have a build in some sort of a safety account for, because you just expect that there's going to be a broken cable of something. It's going to have to get taken care of, and if it's at all projectable, even if you just said, well, here's the variance, and maybe just plan for the minimum, but we always have at least that much.
We kind of do that when we're doing the budget anyway, because we look at prior years, and there's
mm-hmm.
always going to be variances, because sometimes, like you said, something big breaks, and other times, you float along fine, so I think that's kind of built in there when we do the budget, but the strategic plan is kind of different, and I don't know.
Yeah,
I think that needs
like,
to be.
But it's kind of like, I know I'm gonna, I want to. The strategic plan says I want to replace a certain class of vehicle every so many years, but it doesn't count the time that the vehicle just gets broken to the point where Sean can't fix it anymore. And you have to replace it early, so.
I think that's more maintenance capital plan.
Yeah,
I actually envision it more as, we've often talked about agritourism, what's going on in Center Valley.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about issues that we could tie in with the county on,
mm-hmm.
something
mm-hmm.
system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at some point we need to say, look, we're gonna set aside either staff resources or dollars to the tune of 15% of
mm-hmm.
whatever our cash is at some point, so that we know as we move forward we're going to be doing something in those areas. That's what I'm talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I would say is it doesn't have to be big. I think the strategic plan that we have today is I don't want to say anything because it'll come back and bite me. But
it was a big cumbersome process. We don't want to repeat.
Right.
Yeah.
But we can build. You can build on a strategic plan.
Right.
And so to come up with something that's very short and concise. There's nothing wrong with a 2-page strategic plan.
Absolutely not.
No,
yeah.
And at least it gives you something as a starting post, and then you can say, okay, we'll revisit this in 6 months, whatever you want to add to it.
And you know we have an empty workshop right here on your little calendar. We have an empty workshop with nothing there on the 27th. And so I'm not sure what you're thinking, Pete. If you brought this up in response to the 5-year capital program, would you think that would be good to have the 5-year capital program before the strategic plan or after, or would it make any difference? I think does one inform the other?
I think they both, and that's what, you know, the commission directs the organization through its plans and its motions and directives. And so the plans that really weigh in here are, first, our comprehensive scheme of harbor improvements, then our strategic plan, our capital program, and I keep saying back to capital program because it's a continuously rolling program, but that has not been so. To your point, we are continually experiencing these unexpected capital expenditures, and I would argue that is because we did not have a robust capital program before, so that we can identify them, see them coming. Nor did the organization have a sufficient capital reserve building. We have instituted that to where, and that is port-wide. And so over time, that will help us to address those kind of, wow, we didn't know that was gonna break. But hopefully we're also saying, well, we can anticipate this breaking in, you know, the next 5 years, so we need to be looking at replacing it. So all of those kind of fit together to help guide the organization. So I don't kind of tend to think of them like one before the other. I think that they all inform each other. I think, well, you know, whether we look at the strategic plan first, I agree with you, Commissioner, that I think that you could do a very abbreviated and economical in its words and scope update to the capital plan or to the strategic plan. I do think that really kind of diving in and understanding the capital needs of the organization will help inform that process for you and for us. So I would recommend us kind of going through us really kind of walking you through the projects that we've identified and having you, you know, get a comprehensive look at the organization. I think that would serve as a good foundation then for looking at, okay, can we do an update and provide strategic guidance again. I've always thought that having a kind of commission retreat mid-year that then really informs the budget process is way more effective, and I would absolutely support a change from that we have our retreat then. Commissioners, what do we want to focus on? What do we want to accomplish? And then roll that right into the budget planning.
Well, that would really make the retreat, effective, yeah,
mm-hmm.
in terms of you can modify your strategic plan at that time.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And that would
yeah.
guide the budget
mm-hmm.
for Q3, Q4.
Mm-hmm.
That's nice.
And mm-hmm. one of the things that, I mean, in preparation for the little dissertation and discussion that we did last night down at Port Ludlow. I mean, there are things I think that maybe we ought to start planning to diversify
mm-hmm.
our portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
We don't plan to do it, and so it doesn't get done. And I think there's some benefit in doing that diversification.
Mm-hmm.
Into more economic development sort of things. It means some staff time. Right now, staff's running at, you know, full mill power all the time. Need to break some time out from staff. Need to have some discretionary money in the capital and expense plans to be able to
to go out and really, you know, chase some of these economic opportunities.
So the bid opening is what day?
May 7th.
7th, yeah.
Monday.
So we'll know if we're gonna have any, I mean, that's gonna really drive staff time, available time, whatever the results of that is. So I think I would like, I agree with Pete and Sam, I'd like to see a retreat in the middle of the year, and it, maybe more than just a workshop, maybe a real retreat, you know, where we can spend a whole day doing it. And make it be it, you know, so we don't have this thing hanging over. It's like, we need to do this, but we all don't want to because it's so big and we don't see it the first time. But we should maybe wait until after the bids are open to see if we can actually have any staff time to go up to it.
Yeah.
Okay, so I will take away from this conversation that we will proceed with policy discussions on business practices and leasing practices on the 23rd of May, that we will keep the five-year capital plan of the 13th of June, and then look at planning some type of a retreat, either for that day of a normal workshop or some other time, kind of mid to late June.
What are you hoping to get out of the five-year capital program? Are we adopting anything?
No, this is just workshop. And really, it's to inform the commission of the kind of inventory that we've been doing.
Didn't we just get that?
That was just 1 year.
Okay.
Lots more to come.
Okay.
Did I adequately summarize that for dates? Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay, so I guess now we're on to section 7, staff comments.
Yes.
Can I make one comment on your scheduling here? If we do a retreat, I think it would be beneficial to do it prior to the 27th workshop.
Okay.
Because then we could come out of a retreat and we may want to have a workshop based on what comes out of that retreat.
Okay.
And then we have to talk about that in 6:27 workshop.
Yeah. Later. And then Bertram wouldn't have to spend the whole day at the retreat. He could just have a workshop. Oh, is he gone already?
we'll send him a memo.
Yeah, we'll send him a memo.
Does that sound all right, Sam?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So staff comments?
Yes, one primary comment that I have is we have been working with Kidder Matthews on their rent study. They had indicated that they hope to have it come to us today on the 25th. That has not happened. We have gotten some draft materials. We are continuing to work with them. We hope to have something back by the 27th, but I don't have a guarantee on that. I'll also tell you that then Peter Charette will be out of office for some time, so if we don't get it by Friday, I'm not sure what the schedule is after that. I will confirm that with him, but we have continued to work with them. We're trying to get your product. Other than that's it for me.
Well, I think you've already seen the operators report. You can look at it kind of, to some extent, it's self-explanatory. You know, we're doing well, obviously, in the RVs, and everything that we looked at many a year ago still continuing to bear fruit substantially. Nightly counts, for example, are growing right now. The boat haven on the nightly count is down compared to 17. 17, we had the trilobite fisheries, we had extended crab openings, and that really contributed a substantial amount to the boat haven marine nightly count. We just haven't had it this year. So, but that would explain actually a significant portion of that, where you see there's 420 in March and we're down 228, but we're not doing horribly by any stretch. And then again on the work yard, you know, we hauled out 81 vessels in March, and that's equal to the high point in 2015, but the yard's down, and there's different reasons for that, but it's clearly, you know, we're not getting it on the storage end of it, and or with a discount, you know, our revenue could be down. But obviously the raw numbers for out of waters are up. And on the, in the shipyard on the 300 ton, if you look at that, it's interesting because like in 2016, when there was 21, Sometimes what happens is they get backed up or whatever, get bad weather, and just trying to get vessels in and out of the yard. But, you know, we're doing pretty well with at 13 and 32 for the quarter. And there we're seeing, you know, larger projects, so it's up, and I think they're going pretty well. And I think the staff, I just want to thank, you know, our business manager, TJ Kwan, and also Terry Kyle, especially, and all that they've done. I also just want to recognize Larry Ozzie, the maintenance manager, and it's pretty amazing, the maintenance crew on some of the stuff that they're undertaking for projects. You know, there was a leak over in the Army building. It's kind of been ongoing. And, you know, they were up there, if you saw them, they were up on the cherry picker, the man lift. And John Green and Charlie were up there. Anyway, they're doing a really, those guys are pretty skilled and doing a good job. And so we hope that we're going to knock, we're trying to find cures for some of these issues that have been plaguing our assets. And that will also come out with some of the feedback. You'll see some things that are more important than other people have been working on. But main screws are just trying to do a pretty darn good job.
So, there's some weird numbers in your account, your nightly counts. Like if you look at Point Hudson Marina, February 2018, you have 28. And I mean, that's so far out of the realm of whatever. Are you sure that number's correct?
I'm on nightly count.
Point Hudson Marina, nightly count. You look at February. I mean, it's like 100% different than any other year. See what I'm saying?
Yep.
I'm just pointing it out. You might want to double check that. And even the Boat Haven Marina nightly count in 2018 is a little bit weird too, in terms of the trend.
Well, and that one is, that is, you know, we track that very specifically because of the tribal fisheries.
Okay.
So there was no question when we looked at it, the big variance, without question, there was, you know, there was an Armada coming through here launching. And it also goes a little bit to some of the ramps usage too in the revenue.
Yeah, I was just pointing it out that kind of caught my eye, like, wow.
And they had extended crab openings. You know, they were out there fishing, they couldn't get they couldn't harvest it, so they extended it and kept extended quite a bit last year. So that was that 420 is kind of an anomaly. So the 228, but we're also we're working on guest monthly more than nightly in a sense.
All eyes are on you.
Outside of what was included in the weekly status report, just a reminder that Saturday, May 5th is opening day for boating. So Sam will be speaking at the boat parade, which will start at 12:30, and it's sponsored by the Yacht Club.
Where's it start?
In the water. I don't know off the top of my head. I'll get the exact details for you.
Do you have anything, Carol?
I don't think
so. Sue?
No.
Have you? Okay. Commissioner comments. What did you do last night?
What did I do last night? Last night, I was invited to give a talk on economic development to the Jefferson County Democrats. And I fumbled my way through 5 minutes of that and answered a couple of questions. So, did well. I had just gotten back from the San Francisco Bay Area, where the hot topic is affordable housing, oddly enough.
Yeah. Makes everyone rents look affordable.
Yeah, well, we're much more affordable than they are.
Mm-hmm.
I had a meeting with the PTMTA the Monday before I left on vacation. Always about the policies and rate structures, so nice to talk with them. Then just mostly goofing off. This Saturday I have, I'm parking cars for the AAUW kitchen tour, so pitching in where I can.
No comment. Okay, over the last couple weeks, I've been meeting with the advisory group. There's an advisory group that are working together, Mark Burns is part of, and Ron Hayes, and I'm really excited with the work they've been doing, and it's going to come out, and I'm just really appreciative of the fact that we've got people willing to devote their time and energies to helping out the court. We also went out Sunday, and put out the port. Well, I'm not sure everyone realizes the port supplies me and the boat, and we put up the voluntary no anchor buoys along the front of Port Townsend. And usually there's a bunch of problems with stuff that's stunk or gone or broken or wore out or something, and it'll take you all day. This time, oh, Troy usually helps with that. This time Troy wasn't able to help, and we got it done in like 3 hours. It was unbelievable. Couldn't believe how well everything went together. But nothing against Troy, because it was... Anyway, the boys have been very, very effective. There's been eelgrass monitoring, and the eelgrass is healthy and growing, and it's a model program that people look to us from other MRCs at how well it's going. And in the process of doing that, there had been a boat at the little new anchorage down there for quite some time, and it was gone all by itself. And well, I'm not sure if it had help from the sheriff's department or not, but it was gone. And we were able to not have another one on the beach. So, good news. Okay, so the next special meeting we're gonna have is Wednesday, May 2nd. This is gonna be an executive session only. And then after that, the next real meeting is going to be, it's a special meeting, but only because the date has changed. So we'll, if you have something that you really feel you wanna talk about, get it to me and we can make sure that it's on an agenda, but we can't add anything on the agenda at the meeting because it's not our special meeting. That's going to be on May the 8th. And, oh dear, here we go. So now we're going to go into an executive session. The commission will now to discuss with legal counsel representing agency matters relating to agency enforcement actions, or to discuss with legal counsel representing the agency litigation or potential litigation to which the agency, the governing body, or a member acting in an official capacity is or is likely to become a party when public knowledge regarding the discussion is likely to result in adverse legal or financial consequence to the agency pursuant to RCW 42.30.110I. So you can see why I read that. And pursuant to that same, to our 42.30.110C, we're going to consider the minimum price at which real estate will be offered for sale or lease when public knowledge regarding consideration would cause a likelihood of decreased price. However, final action on selling or leasing public property shall be taken in a meeting open to the public. The commission has previously discussed in public session and taken comment on the various factors which impact the leasing decision and in deciding the minimum price for the lease, including the term, debt service, repair costs, capital contributions, and security, etc. This is expected to be a 30-minute duration with no action. So we're now adjourned into an executive session.